The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
I think by this stage it is clear that there is not an aspect of Western culture that has not been assaulted at such a fundamental and dishonest level that if you were to continue this game, there's just nothing left. Nothing. The British Library in 2020 announced that they were going to create a list of authors whose work was in the British Library, including manuscripts and important documents by these authors, who had some connection to the slave trade or colonialism. They pull down a sublime thing into their banal, monotone, utterly monomaniacal view of the world, which is that race is the only thing that matters.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Oh, boy. Brilliant words from author Douglas Murray, who wrote The War on the West. I've been looking at what's happening in our culture, you know, societally. And I often say to my wife, to my kids, I said, you know, we are the modern day Roman Empire. We really are. I mean, look at our military might. Look at our wealth. We're the greatest nation right now on the planet. All the great nations, all the great empires that have come before the United States of America have all fallen. They're all now in the dustbin of history. Is America on the same path as the fall of the Roman Empire? I thought today it'd be good to talk about the rise and fall of nations. You know, when I was thinking about the Roman Empire, there were five reasons the Roman Empire fell. The most important of the five had to do really with the breakdown of religion and morality and the family, right? Is that not what we're seeing today? Satan's clever. He's also age old. He's seen what has worked historically. Why not apply those principles today? We're seeing a breakdown in morality in our culture. We're seeing an unbelievable attack on the family. We're seeing an attack on religion. And everything else ripples from those principles. You know, you've got family disintegration. We've got low birth rates. We've got expansion of government. We've got a culture of death. And the list goes on and on. How do we change it? What do we do to make a difference? That's really what I want to talk about with Dr. Jeffrey Shaw, who's going to be joining me here in a moment. You might have heard about something called the cycle of nations. It goes something like this, that the average age of the world's great civilizations has been about 200 years, you know, plus or minus, sometimes a little bit longer. But during that window, those nations have always progressed through the same type of sequence. You go from bondage to spiritual faith, right? Then from spiritual faith to great courage, and then from courage to liberty. Look at the founding of our own country. Look at the courage and the faith of our founders and what happened in the early chapters of this great nation. From bondage to liberty, right? From liberty to abundance. Are we not an abundant nation? Are we not blessed from sea to shining sea? Right? Do we not have the strongest economy in the world? I think the economy of California is the size, it's the sixth largest economy in the world, you know, from let alone our country. From abundance to selfishness, and then from selfishness to complacency, and then from complacency to apathy, apathy to dependency, dependency back to bondage. That's the cycle of nations. I'll go through it one final time because I was always so struck by that. We go from bondage to spiritual faith, from spiritual faith to great courage, from courage to liberty, from liberty to abundance, and from abundance to selfishness. That's where we are now. From selfishness to complacency, that's where we are now. From complacency to apathy, I think that's where we are now. And then from apathy to dependency. And we see the expansion of our government, right? We see people all wanting handouts. And then from dependency back into bondage. That saying was attributed to a Scotsman by the name of Sir Alex Fraser. I believe it was Tyler who lived in the 18th or 19th centuries. No one's been able really to find the quote in his writings, but there was another rendition of that you know, might be this one. He says, a democracy cannot exist as a permanent form of government. It can only exist until the majority discovers it can vote itself largesse out of the public treasury. and that the majority always votes for the candidates promising the most benefits with the result that the democracy collapses because of loose fiscal policy ensuing. Where are we right now? Does $2.1 trillion ring a bell to you? Did we not just see that money being printed and poured out into the American public? Do we not see inflation? Your wallet's 9.1% lighter today. I just think that was so salient, so clarion. The majority always votes for the candidate promising the most benefits, with the result the democracy collapses because of loose fiscal policy ensuing, always to be followed by what? A dictatorship, then a monarchy. Now, you know, you might have said it in whatever form. This is a real truth. These statements, these patterns convey a real truth. There's cycles to nations. It appears that our own country is going through one. I hope we can learn from our past and avoid this. The colonists were in bondage to England. With great faith and courage, they rebelled against it. They obtained their liberty, eventually from a liberty to abundance, which we now have. The abundance is leading to complacency, then apathy, and then dependency. I think you see that happening. I'm here to give us a perspective on what takes place, where we are, and what we can ultimately do to save this great nation and break this cycle of nations is none other than Dr. Jeffrey Shaw, president of the Alexandrian Defense Group and an expert in counterinsurgency warfare. He's been a regular here with us. He's a very gifted author, wrote a book called The Last Mandate. And you can check him out at alexandriadefense.org. Doctor, good afternoon. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, thanks for having me, Drew.
The cycle of nations, is that a delusion or a reality? I go through these, and there's been several patterns. I see the U.S., you know, in step with each one of those things. But give me your take on it. Walk us through this.
Well, it's a definite pattern, and really your listeners need to go no further than their Old Testament Bible, because we see in the microcosm, Israel and the whole world, you know, they cling to God, and God sends them blessings, and they thrive under those blessings, and then the thriving leads to complacency and then forgetting about God and chasing, the belly, I guess you would say, the things for the stomach rather than God, forgetting that man does not live by bread alone. Complacency and sort of a ennui, or if you will, apathy, and death. But then rebirth, too, when they return to God. But it's very, very clear in the Old Testament, in the microcosm of Israel, of the nature of sinful man, what happens when he forgets God. It always goes this way. And the economy is more of a symptom than the cause. It's a symptom of the moral economic decline, if you will.
Yeah, no, I told you, you're Canadian, and you have a different perspective than me as an American sitting here. I know you are watching your own serious problems there in your nation, but you're also observing what's happening here in the U.S. too. In terms of cycles, are you seeing the cycle happening here right now, and where do you see America?
Yeah, I see it in the abundance that came from faith in God, and that's obviously not wholesale been abandoned, but certainly a substantial. You see, in revolutionizing or changing any society, you never need the majority. I mean, the majority could still be God-fearing. What you need is a substantial minority that are willing to take matters into their own hands, or essentially lawless, and they will do whatever that has to be to drive about their agenda about, which we've seen up here. We have a lawless government that's following the only dictate it follows is that of Klaus Schwab, and something about Germans who want to rule the world, I guess. This is just the latest version. But in America, referring to it as a Canadian, we don't really think up any new ideas. All of our ideas in Canada, and with Justin Trudeau, come from the States. We think of Canada as sort of like California, because really we have about the same population. So we're following that whole left, hard left agenda, which is always a sign, in the cycle of rot, that People become complacent. They have forgotten God. Their new religion becomes the belly or various versions. I don't care what it is. Climate change, wokeism, whatever it is. Yep, this is the new God, the new idol. It's idolatry.
It is.
And that's what leads to collapse. And yes, the great, great historian, Sir Arnold Toynbee, saw this cycle, and he wrote about it many years ago. He was a man of faith. I can't remember what branch of Christianity he belonged to, but he was a Christian. And he noted it. Yeah. This cycle, the starting off the great civilization starts off very principled, and then it grow. It's in its outgoing. It's you know, to use other historians like Arnold Spengler, it's very masculine. It wants to take principle into the world, and it does so as long as with God's blessing, as long as it stays close to God.
Yeah.
But then, because of a result of that discipline, it becomes wealthy, and then it starts to weaken, and it focuses more on the wealth, and then you see more on the. Then the wealth goes, but people are clamoring for it. People who want all part of it, in the society, and then that the government can never keep up with that, so it prints more money that has nothing behind it, and it's all been noted by historians, so you're right on target.
I'm with you. I was just looking at the Roman Empire that had such a long reign, and I just see so many parallels to our own day. I was sharing that there are five reasons among many that the Roman Empire fell. The most important of the five had to do with the breakdown of religion and morality in the family. And everything from the attacks on those, ripples out from those principles. Mm-hmm. Family disintegration. I mean, today we see the attack on the family like never before. Back in the second and third century, as the Roman Empire was nearing, it was going through that transition, in the Christian era was taking place, it was a stigma to be tied down to family. Sexual liberation, especially among men, was lauded. And then what do you see as a result of that? What we're seeing today, low birth rate. During the centuries that followed that, we saw, a precipitous drop in birth rate. The Romans, we see it today. And, excuse me, there was a time I remember reading where couples would have 12 children back in the days of Augustus, and then that followed by couples much like today only having two or three children at the most. Fertility, the attack on the family, low birth rate, those two things. Let's talk about that, because history does not reveal the survival of a single nation with a declining birth rate over a long period of time, especially in a moment of trial and crisis. How critical are these two areas, and then some positives here? How do we correct this?
Well, they are absolutely critical, and you've again identified the problem correctly. And yes, the attack on the family, and yes, the person who articulated it very clearly that it needed to be done was Karl Marx. He put it in his book. You can see it in the Communist Manifesto written by him and Engels, he said it was a form of enslavement to the woman, and that it also kept the family and religion kept the whole rotten structure going, so they had to be destroyed. In his demonized mind, he clearly identified the family as an enemy of the socialist state. And of course, here's the funny thing: when the Soviet Union came into being, they tried to practice all of this. They, said it was basically, there's no need for family, and you can have partners or whatever you want to do. And then things started to disintegrate very, very fast. So they went, whoa, no, they put the brakes on that. Ironically, today, yes, what can be done? They've come about full, it's no longer the Soviet Union, but Russia's come around full circle to realizing that without children, they're finished, because they had a very serious declining birth rate thanks to the hangover of the Soviet Union, and abortion was just rampant there. Not just there, but I think Poland, all of them, even though Poland is Catholic, Eastern Europe, Ukraine, terrible rates of abortion, just like wholesale. They were using it as contraception. And that's a whole other problem, too. So what Russia did was, rather than say, well, we're going to stop abortion cold, although the pressure is on that, what they did was they made it more conducive for women to have children. They said, well, you have one child, you get a child benefit and a bonus. You have two, you get the same plus an extra bonus. The more children you have, the more bonuses. So they literally tried to break the physical spell of what the Soviet Union had put into place, that having children was, you know, going to hold you back or hold your career back or make you impoverished. Well, they've broken that spell, and it is working. It's not necessarily by religious means, but it opens the door for that, and certainly it has the blessing of the Orthodox Church there, which has actually been pushing for this for some time.
Yeah.
So we could do the same in the West. Government wants to interfere in lives. Why not in a positive way? Make it possible to encourage family. Tax breaks for families. And I'm not talking about single parenthood because that has a whole disaster all of its own. You need, as we're finding out, you need fathers. Young boys, you raise them to your society's peril without fathers.
That's right.
And just look at South Chicago.
Yeah, right, or Baltimore.
Yeah.
No, you're right.
So you need the entire family. And again, this insidious attack, which was really, as I call it, a quasi spin-off philosophy of feminism, was born out of Karl Marx because he attacked fatherhood because he hated God the Father. I mean, there's some wonderful biographies on him. He used to go in his yard at night and apparently howl curses at God.
Wow.
And this is a guy who came from a Talmudic scholar background,
right.
But to offend his family, he nominally became a Christian for a little while and then abandoned it. Of course, he couldn't stand the idea of God the Father. It was very satanic. There's a real rebellion against if I can make one thing clear, that's just killing our society. The rebellion against the Father in heaven and on our earth has worked out to the rebellion against patriarchy and calling it evil and bad. And in the earthly terms, it had its flaws, but it was still God ordained. And we need to return to that, and we can return to that. And if we had some wiser government making it possible for breaks for people.
Let's talk about government for a moment, because that's another thing that we saw both in the Roman Empire as well as in our own day. Centralization and expansion of government was another one of those things. Take, for instance, in the 3rd century, Rome, and this serves really, I think, as a warning for the U.S. or any other country. It was estimated where the Roman emperors, they employed, I think, about 300 to 350 full-time individuals in administering the empire. By 300 AD, that number had grown to 30 to 35,000 people. And the central government of the Roman Empire had become so bureaucratic and so top-heavy that in order to sustain it, its sources of wealth ran dry, through, and they needed heavy taxation. So Caesar, the Roman Senate, they ceased to be an instrument of service for the people. Instead, they made themselves an end to itself. And we're seeing that today in terms of big government. I mean, the bigger we get, the more bloated we get. The payroll gets bigger. Look how much money it takes to run these operations right now as well, and how much that they want to give away. They're printing money, and we're seeing the byproduct of that in terms of rising inflation. Big government and the errors of expansion of government and centralization. What do you see today? You see a parallel here as well?
I
think eventually the people get frustrated and they vote for more conservative, smaller government. But I don't know. I hope we're at that point right now, because if we continue down this path, I know in this country at least, it's going to be crippling.
Yeah, no, you've hit the nail on the head. And one of the, I guess the new addition that America has made to the contribution of government getting out of control has been the power of the military-industrial complex, a term first coined by your very fine President Eisenhower,
right,
who had been a soldier in himself and had seen the power they had when he was trying to get things done in World War II, and the scams and the ripoffs that these outfits would pull. Because years ago, when I was taking strategic studies, we went down to, maybe I've told you the story before, we went down to the Air Force base at, was it Minot, or it was somewhere in North Dakota. I think it was Grand Forks. And we went on the new B-1B bomber then, it was new. And I said, okay, let's see the $500 toilet seat, because there was a big hoopla back then about overcharging Uncle Sam. It was just something you could pick up at a hardware store for $10, $5. And anyways, it cost $500 to Uncle Sam. And this whole thing with Raytheon and all of them, they are breaking the American treasury and the American people, and they're constantly looking for war too, which also breaks the treasury because they get more and more of it, and it really doesn't help the society or people at large, and it expands government and it expands the whole apparatus of not just the Pentagon but the State Department, and these things suck in billions of dollars, and they don't do the American public any good at all. What's the phrase that you use? A self-licking ice cream cone.
I like that. Well, yeah. My guest today, Dr. Jeffrey Scholl. Doctor, I probably have maybe another 5 minutes or so with you. I want to get to one other aspect, and this is concerning. Sure. We're talking, if you're just joining me, by the way, at the rise and fall of nations, the cycle of nations, some of the signs that we're seeing, the parallels we've seen to other great empires. Before you came on, I made the point out that there's not an empire that has risen that has not fallen, and the United States of America cannot be deceived that we can go down that same path. I hope we can learn from the lessons of the past. And we talk about the breakdown of morality, family, the attack on that. The other thing we're seeing today, in addition to expanding government and low birth rates and all the other economic things that we're seeing, faith. And I want to talk to you about that. The culture of death is alive and well. Things are beginning to change here. When the Romans were practicing, they had this practice of infanticide, baby exposure, where couples could throw their unwanted babies away. They'd either kill them outright or just put them in the garbage. Horrible. They had the gladiator games, slaves and prisoners would be killed in those blood sports. And, we see this lack of respect for life, and we see a real disconnect from religion. Your thoughts right now on why faith is just so critical and so important. I mean, you mentioned a few moments ago the Soviet Union. They understood this. De-Christianization was, it's one of the least studied aspect, I think, of Christian history. And the fact is that if a church goes down, the nation's going to follow, right? It's occurred throughout history, and dictators knew that better than anyone. I think of Joseph Stalin, the former dictator of the Soviet Union. Your thoughts? I've got about 4 or 5 minutes for you. I'd love you to just give us perspective on this aspect of the cycle of nations. And again, maybe some final thoughts.
Well, yeah. The cycle is exactly where you said it is. We're in that part of apathy and downturn, and with the largesse and the government spending. Where faith comes in is, it's almost like one has to suffer again, like Israel had to suffer because I think faith is born out of recognizing the need. It certainly is the need for God to reconnect with Him, and it seems in the human history that it's been, we only do that once we've suffered. So maybe we have to go through a great purging, a great suffering, as Israel had to reacquaint ourselves with our Maker. Because he won't force himself on us, but he says, okay, I think it was C.S. Lewis said, God is a gentleman. If you push him away, he goes away, and then you're left to your own devices, and they never work out so well. In practical terms, again, you mentioned Joseph Stalin, what he did during the Second World War when the Germans were just, gathering up the Soviet army in the millions in terms of prisoners. They weren't fighting for him and the Russian and Soviet soldiers, and they said, no, we won't do it. And finally what he did, what priests he hadn't murdered, he brought out of jail and allowed them to be amongst the troops again and encouraged them to fight for Holy Mother Russia. Once that was did, then they dug in, but they would not fight for communism. They would fight for God, but they would not fight for communism. Wow. So The paltry, this is the thing, the paltry ideologies that are offered really don't satisfy man. The, you know, whether, I don't care what it is, whether you're a climate change fanatic or a woke fanatic, they will not satisfy you. They will just lead you down a dead end, which is where our society is going. And finally, you will either be totally wiped out or you will come to grief and then regroup and find your way back to God. And that seems to be where we're at. I don't think the suffering can be avoided at this point. I think it was Dennis Miller was talking to Bill O'Reilly, and you know, when Trump was reelected and they were all elected the first, and they were all happy. And Dennis Miller, of all people, said to Bill O'Reilly, he said, you know, I don't know, Billy. He said 53 million and counting. He meant abortions. He said I think the ship has sailed. Well, wow. The ship probably has sailed, and there will be great suffering to bring it back to port. But it's through suffering that we find God again.
Certainly do. Well, Doctor, I'm grateful for your time, for your insight as well, and for the great work that you do. People want to follow you. I'm assuming the best way to connect is alexandradefense.org. I know your book, The Lost Mandate of Heaven, that's still available, right? People can get connected to that?
Yes. Oh, yeah. It's still all out there.
And how can they get that? Amazon or major bookstores?
Amazon's
or?
The number one, yeah. Amazon, right. Barnes & Noble, all of those still.
Sounds good. Well, I got to leave it right there because I'm up against the clock, but I am very grateful for your time. Look forward to talking to you again. I always enjoy our conversations. I learn so much.
Well, all I could do today was really sort of rebuttress what you were saying because you had it correct.
Amen. Well, we're on the same page. I'm concerned about the future of this country. Yeah. And there are ways that we can mitigate that cycle. We can actually reverse and change it. And I hope we can learn from our past. That's for sure.
Yep.
Have a great one, Doctor. We'll catch up soon.
Okay, thank you, Drew. Okay.
You guys, Dr. Jeffrey Shaw, he is president of the Alexandrian Defense Group. Check him out at alexandriadefense.org. I have to hold it right there. When we come back, I'm going to change gear. How about something a little inspirational? You know, you might be praying for somebody away from the faith, somebody who you're really concerned about. I had a great conversation with a porn star. I know. Yeah, this guy, his name's Joshua Broom. He achieved fame in the porn industry. He was in over 1,000 films before he spiraled into a pit of confusion and depression. And after just years of a buried emotion, he could no longer, he could no longer live the life that he was living. And rather than give in, this guy mustered the courage to leave the industry, rebuilt his life. He fell in love. He's now a husband, a father, and a pastor. And he's helping others who are struggling with pornography, those in that lifestyle. His is an amazing story because he boldly defied the lies he told himself in the midst of despair. And you can do the same thing. When you come back, I think you'll be uplifted. I think you will be inspired. I think you'll love the story of Joshua Broom. Now, if you missed any of our conversation today or you want to share the one you're about to hear with someone else, go to relevantradio.com, type in my show, go to my podcast, and they're all there for you. Great conversation with Joshua Broom straight ahead. Don't go away. I'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
So I started working in a bar in Hollywood, and there was four girls sitting at a table, and they were pretty, and I went over to them, and I was putting on the charm, and they asked me, they were like, hey, have you ever thought about being an actor? And I was like, well, actually, I am an actor. And they're like, no, we're talking about porn. I was like, I've watched it. I never thought about doing it. They were like, well, would you be open to meeting with our agent? So I met with him. And so what he was telling me was, hey, I can make you famous because you can be the guy. And I said, yes. Probably 4 years into my time in the business, I was just like, I hate this. I hate this so much. And every day it just got worse and worse. And I was ashamed of who I was. I didn't have the ability to display authenticity because I didn't know who I was. And by the end of my career, I did not have any clue who I was as a person. There was probably a year that I wasn't in a relationship with anyone that called me by my real name. I would just go to set, I would work, everyone on set would call me by my stage name, and I would go to the gym, I would get takeout, and I pretty much was a hermit. And that had a pretty big impact on my emotional and mental health, and I become to really struggle with depression.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that's part of the testimony of now Pastor Joshua Broom. What an amazing story, is it? I want to thank a listener. Actually, there was a listener who sent me an email and says, look, I don't know if you're familiar with this guy's story, but I think his story is well worth sharing on the network. And as I looked into his background, I thought, yeah, we just got done praying the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. I mean, the Lord told St. Faustina, the greater the sinner, the greater the right that they have to my mercy, right? Doesn't matter what path you've taken, how far from God you may be, what you have done. God loves you. His mercy is always there for you. Joshua Broom is an amazing story. He's a man, as you heard, who stumbled into this industry, the porn industry. And it wasn't like he just did, you know, 5-10 films. He performed in 1,000 films, right? And he spiraled into a pit of confusion and depression. You know, cannot judge a book by its cover, right? You don't know what goes on behind the scenes. A lot of emotions buried deep as an adult film star. And he just could no longer compress his angst and his fear. But God's grace was at work. And so grateful to have Joshua with me today. He's here to share his story. Joshua, thank you for taking time. And thank you for your witness. I know you touch a lot of lives with your story. It's good to have you on the air with me today.
Absolutely. I just jump at the opportunity to share what God has done in my life. And I have shared it often. And what God has taught me along the way is, you know, early on, I felt this pressure to be able to tell my story well. And then, you know, through, you know, people pouring into my life and just God working in my life, I realized that it was never my story. It was always His. And that takes off all the pressure, because it's really not about me. It's the work in me that I want to share, and the freedom that's available to everyone in the person of Jesus.
Well, do this if you could. Take us back. Take us to the story. It began, we heard you were in the bar, but tell us your story. Take us through your journey. I'd love to hear it.
Yeah. So, you know, a great question when you tell a story, you know, it's like, how did you get to where you were? And right. For me, I grew up single parent home. My mom was 16 when she had me, just absolutely incredible mom. But the antithesis of, you know, my want to prove myself come from, I didn't have a relationship with my father, yet my father lived in close proximity to me. So that was challenging. As someone that I have, you know, come to know my personality better, I have a very high achiever personality, and that's a great thing if it leads you to do things for the Lord and to have great work ethic. But if that achiever personality calls you to want to achieve your worth and try to earn it, it can be really destructive. And that was my story. I wanted to be the best athlete. I wanted to be the best in scholastics. I wanted to get the girl that no one else could. And that kind of mindset was how I lived my life. And in the middle of that, I started modeling and acting, and I had a lot more success modeling than acting. But I found myself, you know, okay, I'm getting some jobs, I'm having some success. I'm going to drop out of college my sophomore year and move to LA, and I'm going to make it big. And I move out there, and I get an agent, and everything's going fine. A lot of people that end up where I did have, you know, traumatic past. You know, they're either struggling financially, or there was abuse or something like that. And that just wasn't my story. I was searching for validation. And I end up in this restaurant because living in Hollywood, and I was, you know, 20, 21 years old, like when I moved there, you know, living far beyond my means, just like most people who live in Hollywood. It's like I was an actor, but I worked at a restaurant additionally to pay the bills. And I'm there, and that's how I got there. And I'm approached by four women that I thought, you know, maybe I would get one of their numbers, and they invite me into this world of pornography. And they asked if I wanted to meet their agent. And I agreed to that between just naive curiosity and just really not having any foundation to stand on. And I meet with this agent, and he says, you know, I can make you famous. I can make you, you know, people know your name. You can make money. You can travel. You can be the guy. And unfortunately, because of my lack of identity and my questioning if I had intrinsic value, I heard a counterfeit version of my dream. And I was like, man, maybe that's as close as I'm going to get, because maybe I'm just not good enough. And I say yes to this thing in my gut that I just know that I should have said no to. Yet I find myself on the set signing paperwork and agreeing to do things that, you know, I regret with all my heart to this day. But when I did that first film, that, you know, that we went quickly from Genesis 2 to 3, where, you know, Genesis 2, Adam and Eve, they're walking, they're naked, there's no shame. And all of a sudden, Genesis 3, there's sin and there's shame and there's, you know, trying to hide themselves with fig leaves. They're hiding from God. God's calling, where are you? And for me, I hid from anything that was real. Any relationship that I had was authentic, from my friends to my family, because I was so ashamed of what I did. And I allowed that to see a future that was destroyed. Because when I said yes to that, the career that I had built in acting and modeling instantaneously exploded. It was gone, because obviously that was a breach in contract with the legal contract that I'd signed with my mainstream agent. And then my mom finds out from, you know, I'm from a small town in South Carolina. So my mom finds out, and, you know, there's just riddled with shame and guilt after the conversation, hearing her say, not that I'm mad at you, but gosh, you're so much better than that. There's so much inside of you that you have. There's so much worth that you have. I can't believe you're doing this. I love you so much. Please stop doing that. And I just allowed my shame and my guilt to determine what I did next, because I saw myself as my sin. I saw myself as dirty. I saw myself as useless. I saw my future is over. So I was never going to be a father. I was never going to be a husband. I was never going to be able to contribute in any capacity in an organization, or I thought I had, you know, lost any ability to utilize the creativity that in me that I love to express. I thought that was over. So I just continued to make movie after movie after movie. And as I did, that shame and depression grew. And as that grew, parts of Joshua started just to fall away. And after 6 years, I had no clue who I was.
Well, my guest today is Joshua Broome. Achieved fame in the porn industry, sharing his story with us if you're just joining in. Performed in 1,000 films. And from what I have read and what I heard, Joshua, you were a pretty good actor. You were winning all sorts of awards, but you wouldn't even go to the ceremonies because you were so torn up inside. You'd come home even after the shoots and take these long showers and just try to separate yourself from what you went through. Stay with me. I have to take a short pause, but when we come back, I want to pick up your story, find out what happened at that crossroads, when enough was enough, when God's grace prevailed, when you found true freedom, and to share the story of, well, how you got to where you are today. Stay with us. We're going to be back with more right after this. Don't go away.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Get caught up on that conversation you missed by going to the Relevant Radio archives. Just select The Drew Mariani Show.
Well, thanks for joining me. If you are just dialing in, we're having a great conversation today with my guest today, Joshua Broom. He had an amazing story of how he stumbled into the porn industry and ended up getting hooked and achieved great fame, but it didn't bring happiness. He spiraled down into a pit of confusion and really was at the end of himself. And he believed that he had no viable path forward. And yet in the midst of that storm, in that desert, in that moment of darkness, God's grace prevailed. And he's here to share his amazing story. So let's pick it up there, Joshua, if you can. You're in the industry. You're one of the best actors they have. You're winning awards. You've done over 1,000 films. And yet there's no happiness. There's no sense of true achievement or success. You're battling interiorly with this. What happened next? Yeah. How did God's grace prevail?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to, you know, to your point that, you know, I'd been nominated for Best Male Performer of the Year 3 times, and then I win it, and I had, you know, made over $1 million and traveled everywhere I ever wanted to go. But there was something about winning that award that, you know, that was the pinnacle of success in that industry. Yet having that, it was, you know, many people struggle with this where it's like, if I have the car, if I have the family, if I have that life that person has on social media, I will be happy. So I checked every box, and yet I sat there with my award and I was empty and it didn't work. And that actually illuminated the despair and the darkness and the depression in my life where I didn't know what to do or where to run. So of course, you know, Luke 15, I ran home to my mom. I didn't know what to do. I spent 2 years covering up and just trying to run. And then I end up getting a job at a gym. And in that gym, I start to, you know, incorporate myself into the world. I'm trying to contribute. And I meet this girl and I ask her out on a date. I'm like, hey, can I take you out tonight? And she's like, no, I'm okay. And I was like, oh man. And she's like, well, we can go for a run. I'm like, oh, I hate running. I just want to lift weights and run fast. She wanted to run for a long time, right. But I was like, whatever this girl wants to do, I just want to hang out with her. And long story short, we go on this run that turned into a walk. And I felt, man, I can't hurt another person because I'd spent a lot of my life lying to both myself and to people. And I just wanted to be honest with her. And I told her about my past and she looked me dead in the eye and she's like, I want you to know something. A person is not defined by the worst thing they've ever done. And a person is not defined by the greatest thing they'll ever accomplish. They're defined by who God says they are. Amen. Do you know who God is? And I was like, yeah. I was like, you know, because I had for so long wore the mask of whoever you want me to be, that's who I am, because I had no clue who I was. So I put on the mask of a Christian. I said, yeah, you know, because I went to church my whole life. I believe that God existed and I believe he created everything, but that's where it stopped. And she was like, okay, well, what does your relationship with Jesus look like? What does your walk look like? What does your prayer life look like? And I tried to lie, but I couldn't, and nothing came out. And I said, I don't know. And then she extended grace to me and told me about her walk with Jesus and how she had been a Christian since she was a teenager. And all of a sudden we just start having normal conversation and very, you know, Colossians 4:5-6, just walking with wisdom towards those who were without. And her speech was gracious and seasoned with salt. And she knew how to answer me in that moment. And that conversation led to a curiosity that landed us in church. And I heard this sermon in 1 Samuel talking about Mephibosheth and how he believed that he deserved death because it was customary for a previous kingdom to be completely wiped out. But David was this different kind of king, and he sent a guard out to get Mephibosheth and extend grace, and so much more grace does Jesus have for us in the middle of when we deserve death, because Romans 3:23 tells us that we've all sinned and fall short of the glory of God, so we all deserve death. Yet Jesus died for us while we were still sinners. And I hear this message, and what has just opened my eyes to is I had the Father all wrong, because when I heard Father, I heard inconsistent. I'm not good enough. He doesn't want me. And yet the gospel says something completely different. And in that moment, my eyes were opened and my heart was filled with love, and the shame and the guilt I'd carried for so long was removed as I put my faith in Jesus. And that person that I had that conversation with has been my wife for almost 6 years, and we have three beautiful children together. And on a daily basis, we go to war to battle the gates of hell together, to share the good news of Jesus with people.
Well, first of all, thank you for your witness and being so public and so open about it. You know, I know there's a lot of people listening right now, Joshua, who think what they've done is so shameful that God could never forgive them. And I think sometimes the hardest part of forgiveness is not necessarily accepting it from God, it's forgiving ourselves. What advice would you give to that person really struggling, thinking, yeah, God can maybe forgive me, I can't forgive myself? What advice would you give to them?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing that you've ever done that has to determine what you do next. Mm-hmm. Because we distort the power of the cross, the power of God, what Jesus can do in our life, because we make ourselves far too important in the scheme of this life where we were created to give God glory. So when we understand whose we are, it can better it can allow us to understand whose we are. But you know, 2 Corinthians 5:17 says it, you know, it's like in Christ we're new. The old things are passed away and the new has become, because like that person you used to be is dead and gone, and that's the power of the cross. And I just want people listening to know, like, whatever happened to you, maybe it's not even something you did, but that trauma that happened to you, it's not anything remarkably close to the power and the love that is available for you in Jesus. And he can remove that and redeem it. And very like Genesis 50:20, more often than not, what in my life I can convey this, that whatever hurt you, maybe God wants to use it to point it back at itself. Right. And maybe you can be a witness to many, to save many lives.
You know, I have a few moments left. Yeah, when I was learning about your story, one of the things that I really was struck by was how the evil one, how the enemy, likes to talk lies, speak lies to you, and make you feel that you aren't worth anything, that you'll never be better than this, that this is the best you'll ever be. I have about a minute or two left, but let me allow you to address that point, because I think that's one of the great battles of so many people in life. If you could address that, maybe just some final thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, that's why, like, the Bible's not, you know, an interesting history book. It's God's word to us, for us. And if we look at Scripture, we see Moses killed someone. David, you know, committed adultery and then murdered someone to cover it up. Peter denied Jesus three times. Yeah. And what I love about Peter is we see that Peter was called by God from being a fisherman. He said that you're the rock that I'm going to build my church on. Peter says, I will never deny you, Jesus. Yet he denies him three times and once to his face. And then we see in Acts 3, Peter is boldly standing there before a Jewish audience and saying, you denied Jesus. You crucified Jesus, but so did I. And he's speaking with zeal, because I have experienced the pain, but I've experienced the pleasure of the restoration and the redemption that is available in the love of Christ, and it is available for you. No matter what you've done, no matter where you've been, Jesus wants to meet you where you are, and he loves you enough not to leave you as you are.
Well, Joshua, I got to leave it there, but I want to thank you, brother, for being here and for your yes to God. If people want to get a hold of you or track down your ministry, your story, is there a way to do that?
Yeah, so on all social media, it's I Am Joshua Broom. And regarding speaking and any kind of engagements, joshuabroom.me is my website. There's a contact form there. I would love to speak at your church. I would love to speak at your event, that's podcast, awesome. All of that good stuff. But that's where you can find me.
Well, thank you for making time for us today. I'm grateful to come across your story. And I want to thank Roxanne, who had sent this from Philadelphia and said, hey, you should check this guy out. God works in mysterious ways. Keep up your beautiful work. We'll be praying for you, okay? You pray for us, too.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you. That's Joshua Broom. I've got to leave it right there. I've got a Kel Clark's coming up, so stay tuned for him. He's right around the corner. I'll be back again tomorrow. Until then, I promise you I'll pray for you. Do the same for me. And we'll talk again soon. Have a great day.
I just saw a video online. It was so touching. It was of a FedEx worker who was dropping off a parcel at a person's house. He was caught on the little camera on the person's door, caught sight of the statue, Our Blessed Lady. He knelt down and prayed in front of the statue. So we never know how our public witness of our faith will touch someone else's heart. Maybe it's wearing a visible crucifix. Maybe it's just saying, God bless you. They really could make a difference and change a life that day.
Bringing Christ to the world through the media.
This is Relevant Radio.